If we claim inspiration for a prophet, does that mean that everything the prophet says is the result of direct revelation from God? Welcome to The Good Word. Our topic for today is the inspiration of the prophets. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Zdravko Stefanovic from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. I would like to go to that question, revelation. I know I grew up thinking that everything in the Bible kind of came by way of visions. See, and it just fell into place. What role does this special revelation, visionary experiences, voices, what role does that actually play in the whole of Scripture? Are there other methods that God has used?
Oh, definitely. To take one example is we have several wisdom books in the Bible. And in the introduction to some of the wisdom sayings, we have the names of the people we know very little about.
You're talking thing particularly of some of the chapters in Proverbs?
Yes, like mother giving good advices
Proverbs 31.
Sons, yes.
Yeah. That is an intriguing one because it is which his mother taught him, King Lemuel, which his mother taught him. So the original source was
mother.
The mother.
Yeah. And see, what do you do? I know this is a different mode, but what do you do with things like the Gospel of John and the Gospel of Luke, where there's very clear evidence that they assembled that? Luke says that he gathered stuff from eyewitnesses and he put it together in an orderly fashion, but he alludes to many others doing the same thing. And John says toward the end of his book that Jesus did many other things that are not recorded in this book, but these are written down for a particular purpose that you might believe. So, what do you do with evidences of a human assembly of inspired information?
Well, there's one Old Testament scholar who I think has done a lot here. He's talked about the canonical principle, which I think is very important. If you go back in the history of research in the last 100, 150 years, there was a terribly active fragmenting approach to Scripture, as if you could find the sources, then it wasn't really authoritative anymore. It's as if you were listening to a great concerto, and all of a sudden you identified a line or a phrase from another musician, and you would say, oh,
that can't be in here anymore.
That can't be in here anymore. In fact, once you recognize how you do, how everyone borrows, musicians, artists, prophets, once you get over that, it really is quite intriguing because you hear echoes of it here and there. And instead of being something frightening, it's something which is intriguing and enriching. So if we can take the canonical principle, whatever God did to bring the prophets down to us, we'll allow them to do that. And if the prophet decided to use sources, blessings on the prophet. If the prophet decided to use a secretary, fine. Now, there are three different categories here. Well, maybe let me back up first and say there are three different ways, and you alluded to one of them, the wisdom literature, where it doesn't come from visions at all. It's simply the spirit-guided, disciplined intellect. There are no bells or whistles, no flashing lights. The other type of thing is those that came by way of research. But let's look at some of these categories. Let's first of all, the use of sources. If someone were to say, oh, I understand that prophets use sources, is that right? Where would we go in Scripture? Dave, you alluded to Luke. That's a good New Testament passage.
Yeah, the first few verses. I mean, it's very clear that he interviewed people. He yes. sat down and talked to eyewitnesses and then tried to create an orderly account. Apparently, uh-huh. he thought some of them, others were disorderly. I don't know. But he wants to put it down in the most, I assume, chronologically sound way.
Or at least some kind of organized way.
Yeah.
In fact, if you do a really raw translation of that, Luke is basically saying, I've done the research. Nobody else has told this story just right. So mm-hmm. I've done the research.
Yeah.
This is the right way. See? It's like Richard Lidke, who taught me my Greek. We used to ask him what his favorite translation was. Well, he says, I know what it is. I just haven't had a chance to make it yet. So,
but you see, what do you do with things like the Jesus' inclusion of parables? And I mean, the rich man and Lazarus. this is an inclusion that seems to have come from the cultural day, but it's in the Bible. What are you going to do with that?
And what you have is Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, sometimes including the same piece in different places. Mm-hmm. See? So to have those that kind of freedom, I think, is really important.
But I don't see sources as a problem, because the goal here is to convey a message. Mm-hmm. And whether you do it by signs, or whether you do it by music, or whether you mm-hmm. do it by word, or whether you do it by reading poetry, the message can still be conveyed.
Let's mention a couple of more examples. Moses admitted that the source of the Decalogue was God's finger. Daniel admitted in chapter 4 that Nebuchadnezzar was the source of the story of his own conversion, and he, Daniel, may have even suggested Nebuchadnezzar, let's put this in the first person, it's going to make it more authentic, you know. And so Nebuchadnezzar was the source of the story for Daniel 4.
Now, when you have parallel passages, and I think this for me is very intriguing, it helps set some kinds of limits. For example, Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy are not exactly the same. Deuteronomy 5 and Exodus 20, slightly different. No catastrophic differences. As Elder Gordon Balhar used to say, the things that really matter in Scripture are embarrassingly clear. But you do have some differences there. Even the Sabbath command, one says remember, the other says keep, but the thrust is really quite clear.
The introduction to the book of Deuteronomy, though, it says Moses began expounding.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's why I make a difference between Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, because the introduction to the book of Deuteronomy says, you know, that when the Israelites were in the plains of Moab before entering the Promised Land, Moses began expounding the words that he had received from God.
You're the Hebrew expert, Stravko, but the word Ten Commandments actually means the Ten Words.
Correct.
Do you suspect, and I'm not sure it's safe even to ask you this, but when God used his own finger, mm-hmm. do you suppose those were very brief, perhaps just the verbs? The reason I ask this, Shari Torah, Gates of the Law, a synagogue in Portland, they have this modern stylized Decalogue at the front of their synagogue, and they simply have the 10 words, the 10 verbs. Do you suspect that that's really what was on the table of stones?
When we look at the original text, you know, then we notice that very often these commandments, they have like a summary statement in the beginning. And you might be intrigued by this. I'm sure that you have noticed it before, but very often those statements are not in the form of, let's say, the imperative and so on, but the form of the infinitive, which is more like a noun. Let's take one example, the fourth commandment, remembering the Sabbath day to mm-hmm. keep it holy. Remembering, not remember it, but literally, if we translate the infinitive, it's remembering the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and then an elaboration on that, what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
So the beginning of the commandment is like a title, its title, a summary of it. And there is a strong possibility that on the tablets, those were abbreviated into mm-hmm. shorter statements.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a look at another category, the use of secretaries. Now, if different authors can see things from different perspectives, certainly secretaries would have the potential for shaping the work. But let me just tell one more incident I was thinking of the other day. A student who was comparing the differences between Matthew, Mark, Luke, John gave just a marvelous illustration. He said, my family was mugged. But he said, every single one of us described the mugger so differently that the police didn't even know who to look for. You see, the common point was the mugging, but the details were all over the place. So if you take the story of Jesus, he was born, he lived, he died, he's coming again, but the bits and pieces can be really all over the place. But now let's take a look at secretaries. Just in the last few days, I had one of my students remark surprise about the fact that Paul used secretaries, because that's probably the easiest place in the New Testament where Paul says, see with what large letters I'm signing this myself. See, and in Romans 16:22, it's almost like an ancient post-it note. We would say that Paul wrote Romans. But in chapter 16, verses 2, I, Tertius, the writer of this letter, greet you in the Lord. You can almost imagine the scribe just couldn't resist putting a little post-it note there. Hey, it's me, Tertius. So you have these little clues there. What other passages, where else would you go to illustrate from the Bible the prophet's use of sources?
Baruch, the secretary to Jeremiah. The prophet Jeremiah. Definitely.
And that chapter 36 is such a fascinating one because the people asked him, did you write this or did Baruch? And it's a one well worth reading, so you see the interaction between the prophet.
I just wanted to make a comment about secretaries, and that is that when we read the words of the Bible, usually one theological term by which we describe them is God's revelation. And the purpose of God's revelation is not to conceal, to hide, but to reveal. And therefore, the authors of the Bible wanted to make sure that they will be understood. So the help of the secretaries was to help reveal the truth. I see sometimes a tendency among people to stick to some things that are not as clear to our generation, forgetting that the main purpose of the Bible is God's revelation, not hiding into obscure, difficult-to-understand words, expressions, ancient languages, expressions, and so on, but it's rather to reveal, to make it clear.
Mm-hmm. Today. In fact, we're not dealing specifically with Ellen White's experience, but at one point, she told about how much she relied on her husband to help her because she didn't have the technical skills to do this. And then when her husband was sick, she wasn't able to do things as much. But the phrase she says, I was to do the very best I could, and then I could gradually improve things, bringing them to perfection. See? Mm-hmm. And this is the prophetic person saying, I can do better. I can do better. And I think that we need to allow the prophets that privilege.
In my classes, when I give some reading to my students, very often their reaction is, this is a good reading. The lessons that are drawn from the Bible are very useful and helpful and so on. But we have one problem, the outdated language. Can something be done to update the language so that we also can our generation can comprehend truly what the messages are?
Yes. And that's the advantage of some of the modern translations. I know a number of my students who simply mention that, you know, the new translation just opened up great windows. One last section here that we need to deal with, the use of editors and compilers. Now, that one is potentially misleading because if you have a compiler, the compiler has the right to put the imprint on. What books of the Bible are most obviously works of compilation? Can we put any there that are clearly compiled by later editors?
Probably Proverbs would be one good candidate. Psalms.
And Jeremiah would be another one.
Yes. Yeah.
In fact, Jeremiah 25 says these are the Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah compiled. Mm-hmm. That is almost 250 years after Solomon, but somebody got really excited about the prophets, about
the work. They must have found his writings. Though.
They must have found his writings. But our time is up, and we're going to have to go on. Next week, we'll talk about the testing of the prophets. My conversation partners, again, will be Dave Thomas and Zdravko Stefanovic. My thanks to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.